Real quick, we're going to jump in right now. The Andy Griffin Show. I have on the phone with me Bruce Westerman and Celeste Molloy, a couple of members of the U.S. House of Representatives. I really appreciate both of you coming on the show today. Good to talk to you.
Hey, Andy, good to be with you and be on with Celeste. And I just boarded an airplane, so my time's going to be brief, but wanted to jump on visit with you. And I'm the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee, and Celeste is one of the very valuable members of that committee. And we had an opportunity last week to go to Japan and Taiwan and South Korea. They're all interested in our resources, especially U.S. LNG and also mining of critical minerals and rare earths. Good trip, and great to have Celeste along. And, I mean, she does just a fantastic job representing her constituents there in Utah and really for the whole country.
Celeste, thanks for being here as well. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Now, Celeste is a native of southern Utah and southern Nevada, and I'm guessing, Celeste, you've never been to East Asia. Is that true?
You are correct. That was my first trip to Asia, and it is a long flight there.
What was the goal? And let me ask Bruce, what was the goal of you guys going over there? Was it kind of a here's what we have, or were you trying to find out what they want, or what was the goal?
Well, President Trump's already met with several of the leaders from these countries, and they've publicly gone on record saying they want LNG. About 9 trillion cubic feet of gas up on the north slope of Alaska.
Wow.
That needs a market, but we also need a pipeline and an LNG export. They not only want the gas, they want to invest in the infrastructure. And we're talking about, on that project alone, could be up to $100 billion of investment to get the pipeline and then to get the LNG export facility. But they're also wanting in mining and battery plants. Everywhere we went, they're very pro-America and wanting to, get their assets here on our soil, because they like the way that we do business and the fact that we've got a stable government and all the benefits that come with making things in America.
What was the feeling out there with the change of administration now, with President Trump as president as opposed to our previous administration? Are they as excited as a lot of us here in the United States are to have Donald Trump in charge?
That's certainly what I took away. You know, everybody's concerned about the tariffs, but I think that's going to work itself out. They were very excited about being able to build things here. And that America is back on the world stage, taking a positive stance on energy production and also on getting things out of China and into friendlier places. We're way too dependent on China for so many things. And when we work together with our allies, it's going to be pretty amazing the things we can do.
Yeah, one of the things they talked to us about, Andy, that I thought was interesting, I think your listeners will find interesting, is in all three of those countries, we had meetings where they brought up U.S. permitting and how we have to get it fixed so that it's quicker.
Boy, do
we. When they're investing in the United States, they have some certainty of when they'll be able to get a return on that investment. And I think we all know that, but it was interesting to hear it from our allies.
Yeah, I think they probably noticed. Why do things take so long? Why is there so much red tape? Why did there have to be so many studies done about studies about studies about studies in this country? So, I know that's been something on your mind. Bruce, I want to ask you, you're from Arkansas. Tell us about the natural, you're the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee. How does Arkansas figure into that? Do you have a lot of natural resources in Arkansas? I guess you can appreciate what we have in states like Utah.
Oh, yeah. I'm very pro-Arkansas, born and raised there. But I remember in Arkansas history in fifth grade, they used to teach us that you could cut Arkansas off from the rest of the world, and we had everything to be self-sufficient. We actually have coal and oil and gas. We got very abundant agriculture land. We got lots of water. We've got beautiful forests and a strong forest products industry. So we could provide all the food, fiber, and energy to feed and energize ourselves, plus a whole lot more other people. One of the big things that we just found in Arkansas is the largest deposit of lithium that they say possibly in the world. So one of the companies we met with in Korea was LG, and they're partnering with Exxon to help develop the lithium in my district.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you need to go, Bruce. I really appreciate you coming on and just kind of informing us a little bit about your trip. I think, Celeste, you're going to hang on a little bit longer?
Yeah, I'll stay on for a little bit.
Okay, very cool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Great to be with you. And sorry, I've got to jump again. I really appreciate Celeste's work on the committee, and she was a real asset to have on the trip. And, they're talking about hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars of investment in the U.S., and she was telling them all about Utah on the trip as well.
Nice. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it. Celeste, I alluded to it a little bit, but your first trip to East Asia, how was it? And were your eyes open a little bit about some of the conditions and some of the way things are there? Or was it, I don't know, tell us about it.
Yeah, no, it was a really eye-opening trip. I didn't realize how dependent. So we went to Japan, Taiwan, and South Korea, mm-hmm. and all three of those countries talked about how dependent they are on other countries for their energy needs. Mm. And they import most of their energy, and they're in the same boat as the rest of the world. Their energy needs are only growing. So one of the things we spent a lot of time talking about there is the geothermal research that we're doing in Utah. With Fervo and Forge on how to produce geothermal energy with a smaller footprint and with different resources than we used to think were required, because they have some of the geothermal conditions to be able to produce energy, but they're not producing much of it because they don't have space. And so the directional drilling that's going on in Beaver County, learning how to produce geothermal with a small above-ground footprint and a large below-ground reach, is something they were really interested in. And I talk a lot about, being energy dominant is important, not just so we're not dependent on our enemies for energy, but also so we can develop technology that we can export. And that was a real good lab on why that's important. They need our help. They're buying gas from Russia. They don't want to buy gas from Russia.
Right.
They're dependent on China, and they don't want to be dependent on China. And the technology we're developing in the West Desert in Utah could help our allies not be dependent on Russia for gas. That's a really big deal.
I was thinking about how scary that must be to really rely on other countries to have the lights on, just to get your, yeah. Your oven to work or whatever. That's kind of got to be a scary feeling for those countries.
Yeah, I mean, Taiwan's sitting right there close to China, and the whole world holding their breath, hoping China doesn't decide to invade.
Yeah.
And they know they have about a week's worth of energy and a week's worth of food.
That's it.
If China blockades them, they're in big trouble. If they're producing their own energy, that helps solve some of those problems. It helps them hold out longer if China does decide to invade.
Tell me a little bit about your role on the committee there, the Natural Resources Committee. That's kind of one of your areas of expertise, right?
Yeah. So I was there with the committee, specifically with the Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries Subcommittee, which I'm on.
Okay.
And Harriet Hageman from Wyoming is the chair of that subcommittee. And we spent a lot of time talking about illegal and unauthorized fishing as well, which is not a huge issue in Utah. We don't have big oceanic fisheries,
yeah.
but it's a big issue, again, for geopolitics. So if these Asian countries have ships from China and Russia coming in and illegally fishing and collapsing their fisheries, that also makes it harder for them to feed themselves.
Mm.
And so we spent a lot of time talking with them about that, too. And the U.S. Coast Guard is the gold standard for the world on regulating illegal, unauthorized fishing.
For the world, even, huh?
Yeah. And some of the countries, especially, in the South Pacific, they're not big enough to stand up a big enough fleet to defend themselves. And so we help them with technology and training so that they can make sure they're protecting the fisheries that feed a lot of the world.
It's weird. If you think about illegal fishing in Utah, you're like, well, Jim Bob went out without a license, right? That's really what we think about. We don't think about, you know, the large scale that, large scale that you're thinking of. That doesn't even cross our minds. But like you said, maybe a little eye opening, huh?
Yeah, and I'm not a fish eater myself. I would just as soon eat beef. But we went to fish market. Yeah, exactly. In Tokyo, we went to a fish market at 4 o'clock in the morning and watched them auction off sushi-grade tunas.
Oh.
And some of those go for like $3 million.
What?
So you can imagine why it's worth, a ship going out and illegally catching these tuna if you can sell it for $3 million.
Yeah.
It takes a pretty robust regulatory regime to make sure that those don't get fished out and collapse the population.
So our role then as for the United States would be then the training to help them stop that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Celeste Malloy, just fresh off of her trip to South Korea, Taiwan, and Japan. Did you eat some sushi while you were out there, Celeste? I know you're not a fish person.
I didn't. I tried one scallop just to prove that I'm willing to try it, but it still tastes like fish to me. I'm not that interested.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always said, I'm the same way. I always said, if you could find a fish that doesn't taste like fish, I'll eat that. But then it kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Before I go, though, can I tell you a quick story about Bruce Westerman?
Sure.
Chairman Westerman, the first time I ever met him, it was in St. George when I was with the county, and we had that big Natural Resources Committee field hearing on the BLM plan in St. George, and he's from Arkansas, and he was very confused why we had Dixie written on the rocks in St. George at the beginning of the hearing. He said, this is the first time I've ever had anyone from the West welcome me to Dixie. It was a strange experience for him.
But he learned about the Dixie spirit, right?
Exactly. And he loves St. George. In fact, we've had a couple other field hearings since then because he had such a good experience.
I actually have a friend, Celeste, that moved from St. George to Arkansas. Only person I've ever met that moved from St. George to Arkansas. But one of the reasons he did it is he sold his house for like $600,000 here and bought two houses and 14 acres in Arkansas for the same price. So,
wow. Yeah. He probably got a lot more trees in Arkansas, too.
And he has two ponds on his park. The guy owns two lakes, for crying out loud. Anyway, I need to let you go. I know you've got lots going on. But Celeste, thank you for coming on and spending a few minutes with us today.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. We'll see you later. Representative Celeste Malloy. By the way, Mello has been along the whole time, being very quiet over there like a mouse.
I know.
You okay, Mello?
Yeah. I was taking it all in. That's quite the trip. I can't believe she didn't have sushi, though.
I'm with her, though. I'm like, you know, you better cook. I don't want to eat fish, but if I'm going to eat it, you better cook it first, is all I'm saying.
So I used to be the same. I used to not ever eat seafood or shrimp. I would have shrimp, but no tuna, no seafood, no none of that.
And
that was when I lived on the East Coast, which was such a missed opportunity for me because they have, like, you're right by the ocean, right? And I didn't ever have it. And then, I don't know, just like 10 years ago, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try it. And I love it.
Do you?
I love, like, raw tuna and sushi and all that fun stuff.
One time, my wife and I were newlyweds, and we were driving with her dad and mom along the Jersey coast.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all starving. It was, you know, it was like 8 o'clock at night, but we hadn't eaten since noon. And we were all really hungry. And we stopped at this place. It was a seafood buffet. Mm-hmm. And my father-in-law ate, it was like $50 a head.
Oh, yeah.
And this was back in the late 80s. Anyway, my father-in-law ate his $50 worth. My mother-in-law ate her $50 worth. My wife and I, neither one of us are fish fans. And we're like, do you have anything besides fish here? And people were looking at us strange because we were right. I mean, we're literally a stone's throw from the ocean. So
I know. Me too. I wish I would have done a better job. But I have tried scallops. They're not my favorite. And then my friend made me eat those, like, are they like snails or like escambar? Like, there's like a fancy name for it. And that just tasted like salty snot. It was really gross. So whatever that was, I didn't like.
You heard it here on the Andy Griffin Show. Salty snot. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
This is for Mello. Get up and do it. Come on. Is he going to do it? Not yet, but Mello, how you doing? Thanks for coming on the show today.
Good. It's great.
It is the anniversary of not the song, but the actual YMCA itself was formed on this date back in 1844 in London, 7 years later in the United States. But the young men's, do you know what they are? They don't have a YMCA here. Do you know what it is?
Yeah, we used to go to one when we lived on the East Coast.
Okay.
That's where we worked out.
Yeah, as Jim, basically the idea when it started was for give young guys something to do in the afternoon after school was over while their folks were still working. All right, you ready? Here we go.
Are you ready?
YMCA. Nice.
YMCA.
Ooh, little harmony there. Very impressive.
Yeah.
All right, I got to turn down or I'll have to tell the BCI that I played it too long and stuff.
I know. But, my mom used to love that song, and when she was really sick, we used to do that for like a jam session, and that's like the only thing she could do is like just move her arms.
Do the YMCA.
Really fun. Yeah.
I can tell you that at almost every sporting event I've been to in the last 30 years, they played YMCA, and people get it. And we can't help ourselves. We get up, and it's kind of like the ba 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 in Sweet Caroline. We have to do it. We can't help it.
What a great song. I love that song. Thanks for playing that.
So yesterday, this was interesting. Now, people like Mello are smart, and they have the filters and stuff on, but a lot of St. George, and I mean a big portion of St. George City got a phishing scam text. And it was basically, well, the St. George, there, it was big enough that St. George police actually put a warning out and said, this is a scam. Nobody's after your money. Nobody legally is after your money. Anyway, the text said, I'm going to read part of it. It said, the Utah Department of Motor Vehicle final notice enforcement penalties begin on June. In June, our records show that as of today, you still have an outstanding traffic ticket.
I did get that.
Oh, you did get that one. Okay.
Yes.
In accordance with North Utah Administrative Code, there is no such thing. A 15C16.0003. It's all bull. The whole thing is bull. If you do not complete payment by June 7th, we will take the following actions. Report to DMV, suspend your license, suspend your vehicle, et cetera, et cetera. Pay now, and then they give you a website to pay. And first of all, the DMV or the driver's license or whoever is sending you a text, that's never going to happen, number one. And number two, if you look to the website they give you to pay, check out this website. It is dmv.utah.govy, not G-O-V, but G-O-V-Y, govy. And then it's .cc/US. You know what .cc is?
Mm-mm.
That's the internet suffix for Coco Island near Australia.
Oh, my gosh. So mine, yeah. I just recovered my message because I had forgotten that I got this. And mine says that I have a traffic ticket with California State Administrative Code.
Really? Oh, you got a different state.
Right.
Okay.
And then the website to pay is utah.gov-cne.
Yeah, I wonder where CNE is.
And I actually replied to this text because I thought it was so funny. And I said, ha, 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 does this actually work as a job for you? And I replied back. And then I deleted it and blocked it.
Yeah. That's what actually the police are saying is, look, report it. Report junk and delete. Delete and report junk is one of the options
you get
a text like that. And that's really what you should do. But, again, we just want to let people know there are some telltale signs. First of all, the English was bad on it. In fact, the first line, Utah Department of Motor Vehicles, DMV, final notice enforcement penalties begin on June.
Mine says June 6th.
This one doesn't even give a date. It just says on June. I copied and pasted the whole thing. And then you go to the website, and anytime, if it's not an official website, you know, you can tell right away. It's like, okay, wait a minute. Why does it say dmv.utah.gov.cc/us? Come on, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine looked a little more official with their website, but they messed up when they talked about the California code on me. I was like, this is ridiculous. I haven't even been to California. Like, at least do something where I might have been if you're in a fish.
So a friend of mine named Holly, she lives in Washington State now. She's actually moved from St. George to Hawaii, to Minnesota, to Washington. In the last 4.5 years, she's been in 4 states. But she lives in Washington now. But because she got her phone in St. George, she lived here for many, many years. She got the text too because they thought, oh, she must still be in St. George. Well, she's in Washington State. So she actually posted online. She's like, this is pretty funny. I'm not even in Utah. I haven't been in Utah for almost 5 years and they're still trying to scam me or fish me.
Right. So. And it came from an email address. I don't know if yours did. Mine came from RuralUSALisa1142@jobforyou.com.
That is wild, yeah. So anyway, folks, don't fall for that. Don't give me any money. If you have, this is kind of the rule. If I'm really not sure, like if they fooled me, I'm close to, maybe I need, call the actual agency that they claim to be. Don't call the number they give you or go to the website. Call the actual agent. So look up on the internet, just search DMV, call and ask them, say, is this possible that this was real? And they would 99.9% of the time say no.
Yeah, I did have a scammer that didn't get me, but they did waste an hour of my time one time. And that will never happen again. I was so, so mad.
Are you kind of played with them on this text, right, a little bit? Yeah. Are you one of those that will play with the telemarketer? Because I like to do that, and my wife gets mad at me. She's like, why are you doing that? And telemarketers call, and I'm like, so what's your real name? Where are you really? I had one guy that said his name was Mike or something like that, but he clearly had an Indian accent. And he said he was calling from Lincoln, Nebraska. He was clearly calling from, like, New Delhi or something.
Yeah.
So I called him, and he was selling lawnmowers, some kind of lawnmower. Mm. And I was like, what's your real name? He's like, my name is Mike. I'm like, what's your real name? My name is Mike. I'm like, what's your real name? My real name is Sanjay. And I said, Sanjay, where are you from? Because if you're from India, I know there aren't a lot of lawns in India, and you probably don't even know what a lawnmower is or have ever touched one. He's like, well, I am in New Delhi, and I don't have a lawn. You are correct.
Aww.
You know, yeah, so I called him on it.
But. No, I don't play with them. I'm just, because I don't know what it is. As a real estate agent, you get so many people calling you asking do things and join things and pay for things, and it's exhausting. So I do have a spam filter on my phone for phone calls. So it'll say spam risk detected, and then I send those to voicemail immediately because otherwise I'm on the phone all the time. And I also, as a realtor, because we don't have like health insurance through our brokerages, I always get texts probably like 4 a day asking if they can send me a health insurance plan or a PPO. That gets kind of old too.
I had someone the other day text me and say, do you know of any handymen? And we had a couple of, over the last 20 years, we've had a couple of different regular ones, but they both have moved down to the area. And so I was like, no, I don't really know off the top of my head, but I was thinking about you. And I was like, I'll bet Mello knows like 5 of them.
Yeah, my favorite, and I use them on my own property, is Klemp Handyman Service.
Klemp?
Klemp, K-L-E-M-P.
K-L-E-M-P.
Hmm. Yeah, they're amazing.
It's free advertising for the Klemp people.
Sorry, I didn't mean to drop.
It's okay.
But they are absolutely my favorite. He's so honest. And he taught his daughter to be a handyman. So she's one of the handymen in the team. It's a family operation. So my favorite. Nice. That's Julie.
I have found, so when I was in my 20s and 30s, I was the handyman in the house. I would, and then two things happened. I got older, number one. And I got, things got a little more complicated. Like I could do anything on a car back in the day, back in the like 70s and 80s, because a car, you open the hood and there was the engine. And if you had a basic understanding of how an engine worked, you could probably fix it. But nowadays you open the hood of a car and there's like, I don't know, 107 computer, little computer interfaces and all these things that don't, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say they don't belong in an engine because that's modern technology, but if you want to fix a car yourself, well, good luck to that.
Yeah, you have to be able to plug it in. You have to take it to AutoZone and then
it's
they tell
true.
You.
It's true. It's true. So I have given up. I've gotten a little older and realized if it needs to be fixed, number one, I probably don't have the understanding. And number two, I have a little more money than I used to, and I'm going to hire someone. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. It's great to be able to. I love it. So what I do is I tell my husband, like at the beginning of the month, like these are the things I need fixed. And I've hired the handyman, and he's coming at the end of the month. So whatever you get done, then I won't have him do. And the handyman does the whole list.
And does your husband actually do things?
No, no. It's his opportunity to go ahead and do it if he wants to.
I saw
someone else to do it.
I saw a meme the other day that says if a woman asks a man to do something, there's no need to bug him about it. After a few months, he'll get to it.
Yeah. No, yeah. I've stopped with that. So I schedule it and I give him an opportunity. And then if he wants to, he can do it. If not, then
it will get done, and I'm not mad. So it's a win-win.
All right, we'll talk about a couple of other things in the news coming up after this timeout.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
.9 36 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Mello is along on this Friday as well. Looking out, she's got a dress on and makeup and hair and the whole works. Are you going to a dance or something, or is this just you wanted to look?
No, I went shopping. I said some mean things to myself that I didn't deserve any new clothes until I lost weight, and I said that's rude, Mello. Go buy some clothes. So I did.
Okay, and yeah. Is that part of the book you keep telling us about?
No.
Okay.
That. But I do have a comment if you want to hear. I'm kind of mad right now.
Okay.
I just got a text from my husband that he paid a fee to the DMV using our bank card.
I think he's messing with you.
He said I called the DMV Jeff. And they said it was a scam message.
Jeff.
I don't know. Jane, I don't think he would do that. But
no.
Oh, Jeff. I hope he's joking. He better be joking. I'll find out in a minute, in a half hour, and I'll let you know.
Oh, yeah. We'll find out some more details on that in a minute. I did want to, every week I recommend an online article that I came across, the one I like today. There's actually two of them I like. One of them is called Happy Normal People Month. Those of you who are maybe a little more progressive know that it is Pride Month out there. I don't know how you can get away with it, we don't have a Happy Normal People Month, so I think those of us, I don't have anything against the Pride people. That's their prerogative, except that why do they keep sticking it in my face? So Happy Normal People Month. The article is on the website intellectualtakeout.org. The other one, also on Intellectual Takeout, and that article is written by Wilder.
Got you.
And then the other article is also on intellectualtakeout.org, written by Alan Mendenhall, who is a very good writer. It's called The Beauty of Broken Things. And it talks about, I guess I just need to let you read it. It kind of talks about the fact that we want the newest, latest, greatest, fastest, non-broken things. And he said sometimes you look at something that's kind of old and used up and maybe even broken and you go, it's worth something as well. So check those articles out. Intellectualtakeout.org is turning out to me to be one of the best sites for good reads out there. I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
So did Jeff text you back yet?
Yes, he said it was for $6.99.
Okay.
But who knows if that's all they'll charge. I'll call my friend at the bank and I'll get it.
If he turned in his credit card or debit card number, you might be in trouble.
Yeah, so. I know. So fun.
All right. It is, my friend Jimmy likes to call it Declaration Week in Southern Utah. That means that candidates, if you want to be on the city council or a mayor, you have till tonight at 5 p.m. to file the paperwork. If you want to be a mayor, if you want to enter into the mayor's race, it's a $100 filing fee. If you want to be a city council person, it's a $50 filing fee. And so right now, this was as of yesterday evening, so I haven't looked this morning yet or talked to anybody this morning yet, but as of this morning, there are only two candidates who have filed for mayor of St. George City, the current mayor, Michelle Randall.
Okay.
And a current city council person who ran against her before, Jimmy Hughes.
Jimmy Hughes is going for it.
She beat Jimmy before. Mm-hmm. I think Jimmy feels like that he's made enough grounds on this that he's got a chance to maybe win this time. This is fascinating to me because we have what we call in Southern Utah the weak mayor system. And that means that the mayor doesn't even get it. When they go through over, city council, they bring a topic up, the mayor can talk all they want. And the city council can talk all they want, but in the end, the city council is what votes on whatever new resolution or whatever change or whatever needs to happen. It's the city council. The only time the mayor would get a vote is if, say, a city council person was gone and it was a 2-2 tie. Mm-hmm. Then the mayor could break the tie. That's the only time the mayor gets any kind of voice in actual policy or legislation mm-hmm. in the cities. And so I'm looking at Jimmy Hughes I have no opinion on whether or not he should win mayor or not, but whether he will win mayor or not. But I think he's actually going for a position that has less power as mayor than he does right now as a city councilman. Now, of course, there's more cachet. There's more, it's a bigger deal to be the mayor, and you're the head. You get a radio spot. You get to talk and, you know, and give speeches and things like that.
You probably make more, too.
Yeah, the money both for both is, the money for both is pretty negligible, but, I don't know that being mayor is necessarily what I would want to do. You're exposed to all the abuse, but yet you have none of the, actual voting power. So.
I don't know. I think the mayor is a bigger.
It is a bigger deal, right? But you do have less power. I mean, that's the reality of it. You don't get to vote unless there's a tie, and the only way there's a tie with a five-person council is if one of them is gone. So
that's true.
I don't know.
That's true.
The city council seats, there are two seats available. Natalie Larson and Michelle Tanner's seats are available. They both announced they are going to run again, so that they are heavy favorites to retain their seats. There are also a couple of other people who have filed for city council.
Okay.
And actually three now, I believe. Let's see if I can find their names. Greg Aldred, Jamie Levitt, and Brian Theriault are the three that have filed. That means that we will have to have a primary, which takes place, I want to say, August 7th or something like that, early August, because they have to narrow it down to four candidates for two spots, and right now there's five candidates for two spots. If no one else files for mayor, there will not be a primary for mayor. It will go straight to the general election, and it'll be Jimmy versus Michelle.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Now, you live in Santa Clara. In Santa Clara, let's see, Mayor Rick Rosenberg has announced he is not running again.
He's not
going to return. So, already filing to fill his spot are Councilman Jarrett Waite and Ben Shakespeare.
Okay.
Now, one of those two, I want to say Waite, because he's running for mayor, he cannot also run for city council, and so he will lose his spot if he doesn't win mayor. He will actually be out completely.
And is that the same for Jimmy Hughes?
He's not up for re-election. So he actually has 2 years left on his term. So if he doesn't win mayor, he still is a city councilman. If he does win mayor, they'll have to have a special meeting to replace him.
Okay, so. Well, that's interesting, but I guess you have to go for the opportunity when it is available.
Yeah.
While there's not a mayor in place. I mean, not a mayor in place, but one not re-running.
Washington City is interesting because there have been a lot of complaints. We don't like this person on council, and this person said this, and they're pointing fingers at each other and stuff. But right now, I think it's fascinating. Crest Daily does not have a challenger for mayor. Now, again, they still have till 5 o'clock tonight. But Crest Daily doesn't have a challenger for mayor. Kim Kasperson and Brett Henderson are the only two that have filed to fill the seats that they already have for city council.
So same folks.
Yeah, like if you have a problem, and that's very American of us, right? If you have a problem, you need to be the one to say, I'm going to go on the council and fix it. If they don't like something, you know, run for it.
But then what about with the term limits that the mayor of Hurricane's talking about? What would happen if, like, those people didn't go again, or they just keep going and going, and then nobody else runs?
Yeah, that's interesting. They can, obviously. Mm-hmm. Right now, the term limit is three. Nanette Billings presented the idea that we limited them to two terms. So that will be that'll be a factor. I think that still has to come to the council has to pass it or something before it even becomes a factor.
What about in Hurricane? Who's running in Hurricane?
All right, Hurricane has mayor and two council seats open. Mayor Nanette Billings has already filed, as has Kevin Thomas from the council. Three newcomers have filed as of Thursday afternoon for the council. Shaveen Butler, Cindy Charlton, Matika, that's a hyphenated name, and Catherine Knight. As of Thursday afternoon, David Hershey has not filed to be reelected. He's on the council, and he's, his term's not up. His term limit is not up, so I believe he just has decided he doesn't want to be on the council anymore. So.
Okay.
Fascinating there. We will have, by the way, a full list on Monday. But the deadline is 5 o'clock this evening. So these are, you know, partial, but I just kind of don't want to let people know. By the way, Ivins Mayor Chris Hart is not running again. City Councilman Kevin Smith has filed for that spot, unlike like Kevin Thomas in the other city. Potential city council candidates are Shad Johnson, Wayne Pennington, and Dylan Hurt, none of which are currently on the city council. So they'll get a couple new city councilman and a new mayor in Ivins City.
Wow.
The rest of the towns in the county, Enterprise, Leeds, Laverkin, Springdale, Tokerville, who am I forgetting? Does Virgin do mayor? I don't know. Anyway, we'll have full lists on Monday for you on 890kdxu.com. I'll probably mention it on the air here too as well. So we are at 9:46. So let me get one more commercial break in. It's 3.5 minutes. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. It's 9:50 on KDXU. Mello is here as well, looking lovely in her brand new dress.
Yes.
You deserve it, girl.
Yeah, go get yourself a sundress, ladies. It's amazing. It feels great.
Well, I'm not going to.
No,
but,
I said ladies.
Okay, ladies, yeah. Guys, go get yourself some, what is it, the nickname they have for those white-ribbed tank tops for guys?
Wife beaters. Don't tell people to get wife beaters. Andy. No.
Why would they call them that? Isn't there the obvious connection is, guys who wear those have
the gangsters
done it. Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah. Get a nice pair of flip flops, boys. You'll feel good about that.
So this story on the wire today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read it straight, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. California resident woke up to find a partially naked man in their dining room this week. LAPD officer Kevin Terza said they got a call shortly before 2 a.m. about a burglary at a home in Valley Village. Officers were met by the resident outside who said there was a man inside the home wearing socks, sandals, and a poncho-type garment covering just his upper body.
No.
Officers entered the home and took the man into custody. It's unclear why he broke in, what he was doing, and who he is, but there was a strong smell of alcohol about him. Imagine that. So I'm reading the story, and I'm like, okay, this is California. It happens in Florida and California, maybe Illinois and Ohio and New York. That kind of stuff doesn't happen here. I'm wrong. Yeah. It happens here. In fact, it happened in St. George twice in the last week.
What is going on?
Unbelievable. So about a week ago, a guy went to a house, and I don't have the story in front of me. The gist of the story is he forced his way in the house because he thought it was his home, even though the homeowner said, no, you got the wrong place. And the police came after an altercation. I mean, imagine you're the homeowner. This was 11 p.m. It wasn't 2 a.m., but it was 11 p.m. Imagine you're the homeowner and you're going, wait, I'm not going to let this weird drunk person in my house. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the cops come and they end up arresting the guy. And yes, there was a strong smell of alcohol. Imagine that. Mm-mm. And then just 2 days ago, a house in, that was on Riverside Drive. So yeah. Just 2 days ago, I think this one was in Bloomington, a guy comes what he thinks is his house and tries to open the front door. It's locked. So he rings the doorbell and starts banging on the door at 2 a.m. Now, if you're sleeping in your bed, right, and in your home in suburbia of beautiful St. George, Utah, and a dude starts banging on your door and ringing the doorbell, what are you thinking, right?
That's scary.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know if they had one of those ring doorbell things where they had the camera and stuff or whatever, but they called police, and by the time the cops got there, now remember, response time for police, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, right? By the time the cops got there, the guy had taken his pants off and fallen asleep on the front porch, front patio, in socks, underwear, and a t-shirt.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. Now, police did recover his pants a short ways away. In the pants was a gun holster, but no gun. They did some investigating and found out earlier in the evening he had threatened someone with a gun, two people with a gun. Somewhere between the threatening the two people and him coming to his home, which wasn't his home, he'd ditched the gun somewhere. But
so what's interesting about that is my mind goes to if he got there and he drove there, can they also get him for a DUI? Because he didn't get dropped off there or did he Uber there? Is his car there?
It wasn't in the news articles. I don't know. I know that they tested him for alcohol and he blew a .205, which is four times the legal driving limit.
Yeah.
They charged him with public intoxication and breaking and entering, or at least attempting to break and enter, and he's in a little bit of trouble. He's, but yeah, that's a great question, Mel. How did he get there?
Yeah, he probably did Uber. But is it against the law to knock on somebody's wrong door at 2 a.m.? Is that against the law?
Well, if you try to force your way in and you bang on the door and you fall asleep drunk on their patio, it's got to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess that's trespassing.
At least trespassing.
On their patio.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, but at least they had their doors locked and they were safe and they didn't interact with him. So there was no altercation physically.
Yeah, like there was last week. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the whole thing, I just, you know, I'm a gun advocate. I can tell you this. Now, first of all, neither one of those. The rule in Utah is a stand your ground rule. Basically, if you feel like your life is in danger, then you can shoot back as if you were maybe you're protecting your life or your family's life. Neither one of those to me, I don't know. I mean, maybe the altercation where he was trying to force his way in last week. But I know if someone banged on my door at 2 a.m., I would grab my firearm and greet them at the door.
Guns a-blazing.
With a gun, probably not blazing, but ready. So, I don't know. I mean, you talked about the guy. Did he take an Uber? Well, so did he tell the Uber, I live at such and such an address, and then he got out and went to the, like, was it somebody's neighbor?
I have so many questions.
Yeah, and so interesting. I don't have the answers, but I can tell you this, that has got to be a terrible feeling. When we first bought our, this was two houses ago, we lived in over in Washington City, and we had, we had sold our house without having a new one to move into yet.
Oh, so much fun. Yeah, I know.
You know as a realtor how that works. So we were kind of desperate to get a place in a hurry. So we went to a model home in an area called Hobble Creek in Washington City. And we went in and talked to the resident realtor guy that was there. And he said, hey, you want to buy a house? You know, that kind of thing. And we're like, well, here's the thing. We want to buy this house. And he's like, well, no, you want to buy eight? You want us to build? No, we want this house right here, right now, as a matter
finished.
Of fact.
Yes.
And he's like, let me make a couple of phone calls. So he made some fun. He was on the phone for like 15 minutes calling different people. And finally he said, all right, we're going to build a model home across the street and we're going to sell this one to you.
Wow.
And so it was nice, but we ended up being the first house in this subdivision. They were going to build 89 more homes. It was eventually going to be a 90-home subdivision. And you can guess, right, over the next year or two, there was dust everywhere, and they were building and everything. But I remember the first maybe night, I think it was the first night we were in, maybe the first or second night we were in the house. We were sitting there. It's maybe 2 in the morning, 2 or 3 in the morning, and I for whatever reason, I woke up. Maybe I heard something, but I noticed like there were, our bedroom was on the ground floor. The other bedrooms were upstairs. We had kids at the time. And I noticed some flashlights in our yard. And so I'm like, this is really weird. And then within about a minute of that, I hear, you know, banging on the door. Wow. And it wasn't like a knock, knock, knock. It was bang, 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 knock, knock. And so I was like, oh, man. So I get up and I'm still in my underwear. And I don't know if I had a gun or not. But I get up and I kind of peek through the little peeky hole. And it was a police officer.
Oh.
And so I opened the door a little teeny crack and I say, can I help you? And he said, yeah, are you guys squatters? Because there's not supposed to be anybody in this house. This is a model home. And we're like, well, we actually just bought this house and moved in today. And yeah, so.
Thanks for the welcome party.
Yeah, appreciate you waking us up at 2 a.m. And it was a little bit scary because he didn't have his gun out, but he had his hand on his gun.
Oh.
As I'm opening the door a crack, realizing that he's ready, you know, it's unsnapped and ready, and he's ready to go in case whatever might be going on. But
well, it was a model yesterday, so that's good to know that they keep an eye on those kinds of things.
It was actually, yes, a little bit. After the initial shock of being woke up and a cop meeting you at the door and stuff, it was actually kind of comforting to know, you know what, these cops are pretty sharp. They kind of keep an eye on what's happening.
Yeah, I did move into a brand new neighborhood. I was one of the first homes in the neighborhood. Uh-huh. And it was kind of fun because as the neighbors move in, you get to kind of set the tone for the neighborhood. Mm. You know what I mean? Like I would make cookies and go meet them
so
and
sweet.
Bake bread and hi, welcome to the neighborhood. And there's all those big dirt mounds that your kids get to play on.
Yeah,
it was fun.
We had we didn't have mailboxes yet. Mm-hmm. We had to pick up our mail at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
There were no cluster boxes. The Google Maps, the Google Earth, whatever it is where you can look, it didn't have our house for a long, like for 2 years. There were no houses there before they finally got it updated and got pictures. And we would tell people how to get to our house, and they'd be like, oh, I'm looking it up on Google Maps. You don't exist. I'm like, trust me, we exist.
Exactly.
Well, we're out of time. Mello, thanks for so much for showing up and your new dress and everything. Congratulations. You deserve it, girl.
Thanks.
We're out of time, folks. Thanks for listening to the Andy Griffin Show. And on Monday, we'll have that full list of candidates for you who did file. We'll be back then.